please dial star 611 for assistance.
We get signal, main screen turn on. You're listening to the radio program about Hacker Spaces. This here little radio program about Hacker Spaces. And there we are back again. So, to give you another introduction, we are Single Hacker Spaces every second Wednesday here on Radio Orange. We are the radio channel of the Hacker Spaces movement. And my name is Thomas Lohninger, and my guest's name is me. And today we'll talk about data retention, Austrian net politics, and yesterday's Big Brother event. And because this is the first live show we are doing, you also have the possibility to make call-ins and chat with us. The chat is irc.freenode.net, hashtag hackerspace signal, and the number under which you can call us is 0043 for Austria and 131909933. You can also get the number at 094.at website when you click to contact. And now I think we should start with introducing our guest today, Mihi. Tell us something about you, where you come from, and what's your connection with the topic?
Where I come from is very good. I won't go into this, but where I come from in respect to the topic is that I started playing with technology when I was a teenager. And I got my first programmable pocket calculator. So it actually was a calculator could program in BASIC, and I programmed it, and after a year and a half, I had done everything I could do. And so I proceeded on in technology, and because of my interest in technology, I started doing the Austrian chapter of the Chaos Computer Club with a couple of people in around Vienna. And because of that, I got very in touch with the small scene of people who were dealing with both computers and technology and the political parts and the political aspects of technology and what technology does with the society. And my interest shifted after a while from being a total technology nerd and totally only into technology and what cool stuff is out there and what can I do, to really look at and be interested in what does it do to us? What does it do to our way of living together?
The famous short-term Austrian chapter of the Chaos Computer Club, I only heard rumors because it was long before I came to the scene. Can we stick to that? You dissolved this small group of people at the time where the MetaLab was created, or
exactly
kindly replaced the former Chaos Communication Club, or what was the exact name? It was something like a Neigungsgruppe.
No, the German name was Chaos Neigungsgruppe Wien.
Okay.
So it was the English translation would be a group close to chaos in Vienna.
Oh, today you would be on the terror list.
Today we would be on the terror list. And actually, when we signed up for having this association registered, which you have to do if you want to fund an association with the police, they invited us because they wanted to know what kind of people would name their association with chaos and stuff like this. And after they saw us, they were pretty happy we were in some sort of weird people doing whatever they thought we would be doing.
Yeah, somehow the officials in Austria, also the police, seem to always underestimate hackers and nerds and technology people. I mean, the MetaLab is between the parliament and the Rathaus, the town hall of Vienna, of the capital. So we are in the center of power somehow, and still nobody cares.
It's even closer to the offices of one of the parties that are in government right now.
Yeah.
So they're just around our corner. And when data retention came up, I used to walk by there and stick anti-data retention stickers around their office with the heads of one of their ministers on it. And they got quickly removed simply because I think the people walked past there, but I kept putting them up.
I think it's all symbolic area. It works differently. It gets cleaned every night. You don't see the police, but I think they are always around. You also don't see cameras. I don't know if you have noticed more cameras than I did, but between the Rathaus and the town hall, it's also not much surveillance, except for the metro station.
Yeah, the only area that's heavily surveilled is actually where the parliament is, which is... Today we have our national holiday on 26th of October, and I biked past because I had to go to a workshop where I come from right now with James Vaziel of the Freedom Box. And there is this symbolic walling in of the parliament on this day for Austrians, so they put up some sort of fences around it, and also the area is heavily surveilled by video cameras, but this is the only area around there that's really under heavy surveillance. Mm-hmm. There used to be a policeman for some reason standing at the corner of the street all times when we started the Meta Lab. I don't know what happened to him. I think they're only there in shifts because there's some office of the OECD or something like this. So they have a guard stationed in the street, but usually the guy is just bored and stands there, or stands in his house and reads some crappy newspaper or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the embassies are the only places in Vienna that really have guards on them. But we are already quite deep into the topic when we talk about surveillance and guards and how close we are to power, maybe. yeah. Again, you can call us, especially international listeners, because I announced this show on the single calendar, so maybe we have international callers. The number again is 0043 for Austria, 131909933. And if you have questions about Austrian netpolitics, maybe you can ask it here. And to continue with you, Mihi, you are quite involved in all these things, not only because of your past, also because of the current position you are in. Maybe you want to tell us something in your own words about what your job is right now.
Yeah, my job starting this summer is I'm the, I think, only paid activist to be dealing with net political topics in Austria. We have this small foundation of internet users. It's called the Association of Internet Users in Austria. The URL is http://vibe.at. The site is only in German, so don't be disappointed. But it's basically an association formed when the internet started to get popular, and the idea was to have someone who lobbies in the interests of the internet users and the people using technology. And I think a couple of years back, the activity of this association died down dramatically, and they weren't as active as they were before. So they decided to actually take all the money they have from their member fees and put it down and hire someone for as long as the money is there. And the someone who was hired happened to me to be me when I saw the announcement. So they sent out the announcement in spring when I was very active with the campaign against data retention. And for some reason, my previous job ended in July. I was doing research in the US and partly also in Austria. And so I just dropped them a message, said, hey, if you don't have anyone else, I'd do it. And they picked me. So right now I'm the person they hired for doing net politics in Austria. And some of the topics we're dealing with are quite actual and quite recent.
Yeah, I mostly got in touch with you around the topic of data retention, and yeah, there are some current events. There is this citizen initiative we are running, which is very successful so far, and we'll talk about that later, but I want to stick for a moment about this general net politics and looking back in the history, because I had a feeling when I came to the scene, what was around 2008, everything was sleepy. Nothing really happened. We had no active organization. There was no topic, although the curriculum stances and freedoms in the internet became worse and degraded at the time, because issues like data retention were already around, and it was not the only one, but it looked like nobody cares in Austria. In Germany, you always had the Chaos Computer Club, who is active in so many ways, also culturally very important. But in Austria, nothing, except the Metalab, which is, by its definition, not political. I like to be an optimist, so why not making a big claim here? Maybe we are seeing a renaissance when it comes to net politics. Maybe we can reanimate the topic, and maybe the initiative we are running right now is the first step into this direction. We met around at the AKVorrat, how do you call it? It's the working group around data retention here in Austria. And I remember it was 3 or 4 weeks ago that Andreas Krisch came and wrote a tweet about there is this new possibility that you can subscribe to a citizen initiative online on the website of the parliament. And on the next meetup, I shouted something like, hey, why not make an initiative against data retention? And 2 weeks later, at the next meeting, you actually did this and wrote a citizen initiative. And now we started this a week ago. I think it was, what was the date? It was the
17th of October. Okay. So it was Monday last week.
Monday last week. And the goal to be accepted as an initiative is 500. 500 subscribers who signed there with their name, with their signature, with their birth date, and at least their podcast date, their Postleitzahl. And the postal codes.
Their zip code.
Yeah, the zip code. Thank you.
At least in the US, it's called zip code. I have no idea how people
postal
in the UK.
Postal code. I think
it's postal code. Okay, maybe someone can tell us.
Oh my God, there are people responding.
Actually, someone asked for the phone number in IRC again. Can you say it again? Because for some reason the website doesn't load with me. Oh, I know why.
I can say it again. It's 0043 1 31 909 9933. So, dear Miss or Mister, I would like to inform you about a fire. Yeah, please call this number. Anyway, we were about this initiative we started, which actually was quite a success. Why was it a success? Me, help me.
So we started at Monday night and we sat together and we did the last corrections on the text we wanted to put in and made the last corrections on the form and printed the stuff out. And then we decided, okay, this is it. We go public now.
And let's have a drink.
And we sent it out over all mailing lists we were subscribed to. And for some reason, we quickly got a feedback via Jabber from one of the persons at Metalab saying, hey, we already printed out your sheets. We're signing them right now. And so the initiative was taking off right away. And on the next day, someone went out and collected 100 signatures. So that's a fifth of what we needed. We decided we want to take until end of November to collect 500 signatures, and then we can put it online and then campaign for 2 months until the parliament gets a look at it and stuff like this. And we quickly had 100 signatures. And what happened the next day is that we get another 100 signatures on the day immediately afterwards. And I read an article on the Vibe homepage, and sent it out over the mailing list saying, hey, we do this initiative and please print out and sign, and we need the signatures to go and you can sign this petition online. And some journalists who are subscribed to one of the lists there picked it up and said, hey, this is interesting, and I'll publish an article. And he published an article in a German online magazine.
Heise.
It's with Heise, yeah. and some Austrian online platforms took it over. So the big Austrian network news took it over, and this sort of helped spread the information very, very quickly. And also the local anonymous group sort of retweeted the link the next day. And so suddenly a lot of energy was there and a lot of people were collecting things. And we didn't know how many this actually is until, I think, a day later or so, the first envelopes with signatures came. So the first day, I think it was 2 envelopes with 14 signatures. And then the third day, there were suddenly 7 envelopes or 9, I think it was 9 envelopes with 107 signatures in it. So people we had no idea existed went out and started collecting signatures. I built this little counter for the initiative homepage. And because of that, someone responded and said, "Hey, this counter actually looks ugly and I'm going to do something." And this person actually got very involved and started collecting signatures as well. And so we got a lot of signatures from everywhere, and still letters are coming in the mail with signatures in it and of people we have no idea of. And this is amazing because it shows we just hit a very, very crucial point with people. It shows that people in Austria really don't want to have this data retention law, but it's there anyway. And I don't know whether you mentioned what the details of the initiative. So the initiative is directed against the EU directive. So the data retention has to be implemented because of a EU directive. At least our government says so, because they don't have the balls the Swedish government has to not implement it at all. And so we start this initiative against the EU directive to lobby our government, or to force our government to stand up against the EU directive for data retention. And for some reason, we seem to have hit a very, very crucial spot and a sort of vacuum, because no one really dealt with the topic sufficiently enough before, and no one deals with the topic either now. And of course, we have several players who actually could take this topic, but for some reason no one did. And I think a lot of reasons are personal reasons. So there are too few people, or they are fighting against other things, or they're busy organizing other things.
The general landscape when it comes to Austrian net politics will be a topic we will talk later, but stick to this initiative and stick to the incredible response we got from the people and from the media. I still have the word of Andreas Kirsch in my ear from yesterday. He is another member of the AK Vorrat, of the Data Retention Working Group, and also president of IDRI. And he said he in 10 years of working for digital civil rights, he never got responses from areas so far remote in Austria, but now he gets letters. He is in the same office for 5 years now, but now he knows his postman, because the guy is, "Oh, another letter for you, AK Vorrat." And somehow it connects, somehow it really works, and it gives us a driving force and an issue we've been seeking for years. And if the numbers grow, then what happens then? We still collect this subscriptions, and what will be the next step? What's our goal now?
For this initiative, we want to get as many signatures as we can get. Our next goal is to reach 1,500. It would be great if we can do this. It would be great if we can do this before end of November. So if you're Austrian, or if you know an Austrian citizen, print out this sheet. You can find it on the webpage, and I'm going to paste the URL to the IRC channel, and maybe we can read it out.
It is stop-vorratsdaten.at. I'm very bad with English pronunciation, therefore I won't try it. It's for Austrian anyway. You have to be an Austrian citizen and be over 16 years old to, But We are on a Viennese local radio station, so we hope that also Austrians listen and not only lazy Americans.
So in case you are Austrian or you know an Austrian, even if you don't live in Austria, print out the sheet. You find the sheet on the bottom of this page, or you find a link to the initiative page, and you find a sheet there in the bottom where you can sign. And on the bottom of the list for signatures, there's actually the address you can send it to. We really hope to reach this 1,500 signatures by end of November, and then we can. The reason we chose end of November is really because we thought we'd need that long to go out on the streets and collect all the signatures, but it turns out we don't. So we tried to actually go to the parliament with a larger stack of signatures than we already have, and start from a larger base and start with the online campaign starting December.
Yeah, it just shows how important the topic is for the people. And people have been asking, so you have the 500 now after a week, so why not hand them in now? But the point is, we wrote this date down on the list, and if people collect signatures and then decide to post them at the end of the 20th of November, they would not be recognized. So we want to wait till this date so that all the people who collect for us also get recognized in the number. And if we hand those signatures over, we still have the possibility to raise more over the internet, because the initiative once it's acknowledged as a legal and how do you call this, something that's under the curriculum census, a normal initiative, you can also sign it online. And when this happens, maybe we see another shift, because there was no big initiative in Austria like this before, which was also with the possibility of subscribing online.
The possibility to sign initiatives online is very, very young. It started October 4th, and there's only one initiative right now that's sort of a cosmetic company, sort of greenwashing or whitewashing campaign against, I have no idea, child trafficking, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's the only initiative that's online, and there are 50 signatures online. And we're definitely going to beat this. So we're going to reach more people. To be honest, I think we're reaching more people, because it's way easier to fill out an online form than to print out the paper and go bug your friends and then use this terribly old technology of mailing things via snail mail to get the signatures to us. So I think we will reach more people and different people, maybe a little lazier people or more technological advanced people, and definitely also younger people. And also something that really encourages me that NAP politics in Austria is going to be a topic is I just returned from a festival in Graz. And the festival is around music, arts, and politics. And all the political topics there this year were actually very, very NAP political topics. There was a lot of discussion about data protection and privacy and trying to establish similar laws than we have for the physical body in a digital sphere. We have some laws, some data protection laws, but we don't fully have the same status for a virtual person than we have for a, how can I say this, meat person?
Mm-hmm. Flesh and blood or cyborgs, I don't know. Anyway, I think to round this up, we will continue collecting signatures, and every one of you is invited to join this race and give the politicians a clear message that you are against data retention, which we haven't explained. Comes now to my mind. What is data retention? It's your turn.
Yeah, actually, we should start with this right now.
Yeah, we should.
But this is live radio shows, so you're listening to live radio here, and we do mistakes, which is humans, after all.
And it's typical nerd, which just takes things for granted that normal people, quote-unquote, have no idea what we're talking about.
So data retention basically is a very, very nasty word for the fact that all your calls gets stored, and the information that gets stored is who calls whom at what time. And if you're using a cell phone, it also stores where you are right now at the moment. Also, if you text someone, if you send a text message to another person, this information gets stored. If you send an email to another person, this information gets stored. And if you log on the internet, it's only your IP address. So this is actually the least worst part, at least.
Yeah, it's only the IP address, which is, yeah, basically just the public address, which contains no more information.
But the very crucial thing, and the crucial thing that kicks off most people, is the fact that out of your cell phone data, because you're using it very often, and if you have a smartphone that checks for emails, you get a very, very fine-grained position log of your last 6 months. And it's there with the providers, and there are no big security standards around it. And also the agencies, the government agencies, can access it very, very easily. There is a system in between, and they need to have some sort of reasons, but we all know how reasons can be constructed to actually access data if you want to. So it's a deep intrusion into your privacy, into your private space, because if you talk to your doctor, if you talk to your lawyer, if you talk to your psychiatrist, that's actually only your business. It's not no one else's business. You don't have to tell it. And there's no way for the system to exclude the psychiatrist. So everyone gets this huge intrusion in his privacy. This is data locked from everyone without the fact whether or not you're suspicious of having done something, or it just gets logged. So it basically takes away with one of the fundamentals we have in continental European law, which is you're innocent until proven guilty. So with a directive like this, or with laws like this, you are guilty from the beginning. Because you are suspicious of being a terrorist, because that's the argument. We need this law because the evil, otherwise the evil terrorists are going to kill us all. And you are suspicious of being a terrorist, especially you across the...
Yeah, me. I know. Yeah. But I am. No, I'm not. But that's the point. Somehow the Unschuldsvermutung, is reversed, and everyone is guilty until being part of a major political party. So it is, in this sense, very problematic also for democracy, and especially the possibilities to data mine this huge databases of positioning profiles. You can create graphs of whom do you know, whom do you talk to, whom do you maybe avoid talking to, and which networks are you in. And that's even more frequent than Facebook and Google combined. And it's our state who some people argue you could trust, but I think when you look at the recent events of KISS and other events where the security of data, in the sense of is it stored securely, was broken, I think we cannot trust them. Even if there is no bad intention, we should avoid.
I think we have to deliver some background information here. Mm-hmm. So we have a group of people who call themselves Anonymous Austria. And I think since spring this year, they've been very, very active of looking at websites of all different kinds of organizations and looking into data security and all different kinds of information. They do this mainly to put some pressure on improving data security and improving privacy. And also sometimes the state, they do these actions against data retention. And they found and released, for example, the addresses of 25,000 police officers in Austria. They found it somewhere, and it was not even secured. And recently they got a transmission of a database containing 600,000 people with a local health insurance, a state health insurance, in one of the parts of Austria. And the scandal is... The scandalous thing about this is that this insurance, the state-run insurance, used to send out their entire database to anyone who cooperates with them. Simply, there was no way of really judging whether they need the data or not. They just send out the information as they have it in their database. And this is really scandalous. And so it only took time until someone would discover this, and someone would say, hey, this is not right. And they did. Mm-hmm. And so they caused a lot of ruckus and a lot of noise and a lot of fuzz with politicians around data security. Unfortunately, all the discussion is always about how to make government data safe and not how to make our private data safe. It's not about the people, and I think we have to go to some of the corporations you mentioned here, especially if we still want to reach the Big Brother Awards in the end of our show.
Yeah, I see we have more or less 20 minutes left, and so I skipped the music I would have played here, and instead, I would still like that you call, and you can call us on the 0043 131 909 9933. Because we have failed in so many things in this first show, and maybe we'll also fail with a call-in. So please call us. And yeah, Big Brother Awards. Let's go to that. What are the Big Brother Awards? Now I'll do it right. Big Brother, this term comes from a novel written by George Orwell. The Big Brother is a kind of symbol for the powerful evil state who controls everything, who knows everything, and he somehow has cameras everywhere and controls everything. And we have a call in, I see. Continue with the Big Brother explanation, and I will start figuring out how this works.
Okay, you figure out the call. So as you mentioned, Big Brother is a big is a government agency watching you, and they use these telescreens. So a couple of years back, I think 13 years ago actually, a small group in Austria started to do this award to give a negative award to people who are infringing upon privacy and who are spying on us and who are abusing our data. And this is the Big Brother Award. So they do this yearly giant show where people are awarded in different categories, and they get different awards. Unluckily, hardly ever a person shows up to pick the award they earned throughout the year, and they earned so bad. So who were the winners this year? One of the winners this year, I think you can hear them talk in the back. One of the winners this year were the ministers for justice and the ministers for interior, who after the attacks in Norway on the parliament and on this youth camp, went along to ask for higher rights for more rights for policemen and police enforcement. And instead of staying with the line of the Norwegian government that asked for more openness and more tolerance in the society, they actually went ahead and said, hey, yeah, we need more enforcement rights. And they drew up some very, very repressive laws. But I think we switch over to our caller.
Yeah, just to wrap this up, there is a wonderful meme out there of our interior minister, Mikkel Leitner, and please post it into the chat. And she's very happy, obviously, about her award. And I think we now have our caller in the line.
Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Hello.
What's your name again, please?
Yeah, Gabriel.
Gabwa.
Hey.
Hi. Good. Good to have you on the show.
Yes.
What's your question?
Yeah, my question is, how difficult would it be from the technical side, and also from the cost, how expensive would it be to make encryption, you told me encryption for Swiss long, common for everyone. So it would be daily life use, correspondence and communication. It would be normal to
encrypt everything.
So nobody would be suspective if he uses this. Because now you are almost very verdächtig, suspected or something.
Suspicious. Mm-hmm. Suspicious.
I think we got your point.
Very few people use it. Mm-hmm. But if everyone uses it, it would be normal. So, and for me, it would be the only kind of insurance, assurance to be safe. I must say.
I think this is a brilliant question, one of the most fundamental and oldest in this whole debate. And it comes down to, why not secure everything? Why not encrypt everything? And many people argue in the scene that, yes, this is the way to go, and we have to reach the goal of everyone using encrypted email, encrypted phone calls, and encryption everything. But I think it's always a trade-off between security and comfort. Convenience is often not the default option for most people, is to use what's there, and that's often not secure.
Yeah, because I think one of the main problems is the companies running your information right now don't have any interest and any stake in your privacy and in your data protection. I just come from this workshop with a guy called James Vazil, and he works on the Freedom Box project. And the Freedom Box project is envisioned to provide something you are describing. It's envisioned to provide encryption.
I listen on the radio. Yes, bye.
Mm-hmm. Designed to provide encryption for you at home in a small box. You can plug into your router or into your cable where the internet comes out, and all your communications will be done over the box and be transparently encrypted. So only you and your friends or you and the person you're communicating with can actually receive the communication and read what's in there. So this is one of the technical possibilities there is, and this is one of the projects coming up. But I think the big problem right now is that many people use large companies to communicate. Many people use Google Mail or Google Calendar, or they use even Facebook for communication in their daily life. And these are companies who are not interested in having your data protected. These are companies who earn money with your data. There's this wonderful saying by Richard Stallman that if you're with Facebook, you're not their customer. You are the product they sell. Your data is what they make money off. So they are not interested in protecting your data, because this would mean they wouldn't be able to read it. And they wouldn't be able to sell it, and they wouldn't be able to use it and earn money this way. So,
From the power perspective, you're totally right. But I'm speaking here more from the end user perspective and not so political there. I always see this trade-off between security and convenience. And we are not there yet where the secure option is also the default option, which is the most easiest to use. For being secure, I always have to put more effort in. I have to know more. I have to take care of more things. And therefore, it's not doable for most people. It will change.
Actually, it's changing very, very slowly, and more because companies have interest to protect their own data and their own private property. So most companies are actually pretty good at encrypting web traffic. For example, if they have employees traveling around, salesmen traveling around, they offer them solutions where they can securely connect and only connect to the company network. And then all the internet traffic also goes through the company, so they can really check that there's nothing bad going on there. And when I started using email, it was very, very uncommon to have ways to securely retrieve or send email through your mail provider. So it was all clear text until there, and you would send your passwords clear text over the wire. And luckily, this changed. Hardly any serious provider who offers email now offers email without encryption on, at least on this channel.
Mm-hmm.
This has to change. And no one right now knows about it, right? What they do is they enter their email address and their program, and the program figures out, A, they support SSL, they support encryption, I will use encryption. And this is where we have to go as well with the direct end-to-end encryption between users. It has to be transparent, it has to be convenient, mm-hmm. because otherwise no one is using it. And one of the problems we have here is the same problem you had in the beginning with a fax machine, right? If you're the first person to buy a fax machine within your friends, your fax machine has very, very little value. So if you're the first person to adopt, let's say, PGP to encrypt your emails with your friends, it has very, very little value for you because there is no one you can securely communicate with. But the more people participate, the more value it gets. And this is what we have to reach. There's this powerful network effect. And this is what we have to reach in terms of secure communication.
Okay, I hope your statement was sufficient for our caller who already went out of the line because I think he can listen to us better over the radio. And we should come back now to the Big Brother Awards and maybe also about the landscape of those net politics. Which one do you prefer me?
I think we can stay a little bit on Big Brother Awards and then talk further. So one of the nice things I like about Big Brother Awards is that until 5 years ago, they only had this negative award I've already mentioned where you blame and shame the people who are spying in you and who are abusing your data. And about 5 years or 6 years ago, they started to introduce a positive prize. It's called the Defensor Libertatis Prize. So it's a Defender of Freedom.
And it's also a beautiful prize. All the others were, I don't know, this ugly Big Brother statues, and this one is shiny.
But the
glass.
Big Brother statues are already nice. I remember years where they had pig ears as trophies for the winners, and other ugly things.
But there was one case where someone really came there and received the prize.
So. Yeah, this happened occasionally, but very, very rarely this happens. Usually the people are not there.
Exactly.
And so this year's positive prize went to a guy I really much respect for what he's doing because he's doing it mainly alone. He's called Max Schrems, and I'm not sure his name tells you anything. But Max Schrems is the guy who's behind Europe versus Facebook. And if you search for it on the internet, it's Europe versus Facebook, and it's a campaign where he started to request his personal information out of Facebook. His motivation to do this and to start doing this was he's a student of law, and he was in San Francisco for a semester to study there. And he had this course about data protection and privacy laws. And he was in this, class with all the Americans there. And they invited big companies from the Silicon Valley, and the big companies came. And because the US basically has no privacy laws concerning digital data and no data protection laws, they usually discuss European data protection laws. And the point of all the big companies was always, yeah, European data protection laws are sort of cute, but you know, they don't hurt us. You know, they never do anything. You know, they look nice on paper, but they are not enforced. So he came back terribly angry. And he started to push people enforcing this. And with Facebook, it's easy because everyone who uses Facebook outside of the US actually has a contract with Facebook Ireland. So he emailed them and said, sent them a letter and said, I want my information, all the information you have stored about me. And he filed a huge number of complaints with the Irish data protection agencies. And actually this week they are audited. Facebook in Ireland is audited. I hope very well, by the Irish Data Protection Agency. So things are moving. And what also happens is more and more people, because of this campaign, are starting to request information. So if you out there have a Facebook account, read on europeversusfacebook.org how you can request your information and request your personal information from Facebook. And don't let them put you off with saying, oh, we are too busy, we can't answer you. They have to answer you, and they have to answer you within, I think, 8 weeks or 40 days. They have to answer you. So if they don't, file a complaint with your local data protection agency or file a complaint with the Irish Data Protection Agency, who are already on the case. Because we have laws for data protection. We have laws in Europe for your right. We need to make this dog, this tiny little cute dog who sits around and looks nice, we have to make it bite. And we have to make it bite hard so it hurts them. And this is the only way these companies will change.
To quote yourself from the Elevate Festival in Graz, sue them out of business!
Sue them out of business.
Fuckers. We'll also post a link to the chat with this video of yours. And we have 5 minutes left. And I do want to play some music at the end, but we maybe can talk something about the Austrian NGO landscape when it comes to net politics and data protection at the end. How does this landscape look? Which players do we have? Who is acting in this field? I know the AK Vorrat, who is kind of an umbrella organization where I also work at to bring forward this citizen initiative. And there is Viberty, this user group of Austria, and the Quintessence. The last one, I only know legends and not many good things, but
Quintessence are actually the people right now who organize the Big Brother Award. So that's basically most of their activity goes into organizing Big Brother Awards and organizing a local Linux event. And they're sort of 6 months apart, so they're busy half a year with one event and the other half of the year with the other event. They used to be a lot stronger and a lot more active a couple of years back. Right now, I think about 5-6 years ago, we had a group of very, very engaged early adopters of the internet that were really interested in privacy issues, that were really interested in how to protect yourself from the government, from spammers, from whoever is out there who wants your data. And this group of older people sort of got older and got families and got jobs that take all the time.
And also the Mittelab came along and ate many people. And it's non-political. Many people go there. It's a cool place for hanging out, but you don't do anything except hardware, blinking stuff.
You can do a lot of things there.
Yeah, and many startups, but it's not political.
It's not a political union, yes. And before that, it used to be that if you want to hack on something, you could get access to the Quintessence office. And you were just there and discuss all the other issues with that, and would discuss all the other issues with them as well.
Which is at the Museumsquartier still.
But I think what we see now is that we have a new generation of younger people who grew up with this technology, who start to realize what it means to have your life, everything in your life digitized, and everything in your life being some sort of database. Because when I grew up, and some of the other people grew up, the internet was something new, and having your photos online was something sensational. And right now is everyone has it. Everyone's life is there. And right now this group of people really gets very active politically, and they do it different ways, right? They do it a lot more disorganized as for example, Anonymous showed. And I really see them in sort of net political actor. I don't agree with their methods because you can do things differently, but they are a new phenomenon of people who are aware of what's going on around them. And also in Graz, mostly young people were standing up and saying, hey, were approaching me and saying, hey, how did you get into being active in this thing? I want to be active. What do I need to do? And I think this is the last message we have to send out. What can you do?
Yes. Answer the question you just raised. I think you can join the data retention group and come to akafora.t we have this immediate initiative which you can join, where you can start doing stuff. You can come to the socializing event. The next one will be on the 31st of October at the Center FM again. You can find it again on akafora.at. And other events, you can get into the MetaLab and meet people there. But if you're interested in political things, I think there is not much else besides the Quintessent meetup every Friday, or?
Yeah, but the important thing, I think, is start doing something. Start doing something. Start raising your voice, whether it's on your blog or on Twitter or on Facebook. Start raising your voice. And you don't need to be a lot of people. If you're 3-4 people who are really active in a topic, get together once a week or every 2 weeks and start doing something in areas that you're interested in. And then suddenly you will be paid attention to, because there is this vacuum that people are looking for, people who stand up, show their face and say, we don't want this to continue, and start doing it. It's easier as it sounds. Don't bother in the beginning if no one listens to you. At one point, people will listen to you.
Okay, that's a perfect end statement, and I think I'll skip to music and have jingle as an outro, and I wish you all good night, and join the initiative, come to the socializing event, and yeah, we'll see us and hear us again in 2 weeks.
Get active.
For assistance.
Main screen turn on. You're listening to the radio program about hackerspaces. This here little radio program about hackerspaces.